What up, this is Dart Adams, and this is episode 94, Dart Against Humanity. I just finished watching the Boston Celtics lose a close playoff game to the Toronto Raptors when they had them down 0.5 seconds left and gave them a sliver of a possibility to either tie or win the game. Things went awry, they lost. Years ago, I would have been pissed off. I would have been angry, I would have been cussing to high heavens, I would have been tweeting up a storm about how the Celtics made mistakes and did X, Y, and Z. And I would be really angry right now. I'm not. I'm just like, they're a championship team. They executed when they had to. They did it several times with Van Vliet and Lowry down the line. The Celtics had opportunities to hit shots when they were up four. They didn't. You let them back in the game. They executed. They won. Win game four on Saturday. Now, that comes with being 45, having a whole bunch of my people not be here with me, whether it be friends, associates, contemporaries, or family members, and us being 7 months deep into a pandemic, and me finding out that several institutions that I've been frequenting most of my life are no longer in operation all around me. I'm just happy to be alive, to be in good health, to be okay financially, not be in danger of being evicted, not having any serious health problems, you know, or not being super stressed out because I'm doing pretty okay right now. So that being the case, I don't have any reason to be really angry. I'm going to likely be alive to see game four on Saturday in the comfort of my own home after I've paid rent. Everybody can't say that. Everybody isn't in that situation. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, like Chadwick Boseman passed away at age 43. He was in stage four colon cancer, and he had been working nonstop, and he didn't tell anybody what he was going through. Like, that puts a whole lot of stuff into perspective. And it's sad because for some people it sounds ableist. Well, it doesn't for some people. It actually is. I don't know why people throw that in there. But he couldn't tell everybody that he was going through this because they would have treated him differently, or he wouldn't have gotten the jobs. He wouldn't have been offered them. All these different things. But the fact of the matter is, I'm still here and I'm good. So for me to get riled up about something that I have no control over and I couldn't have done anything about, and all I'm doing is observing anyway from the comfort of my living room, you know, it all puts a lot of stuff into perspective. There's a lot of people who are no longer here who aren't going to be texting me about that shot. And that's the other part of it. So, you know, again, you don't stop. You got to get back up and play again on Saturday. That's my philosophy. And I'm not going to harp on who did what or who was wrong or who did what. Whatever, man. If anybody understands knowing that life is all about shit going wrong, things going left, and you regathering yourself, getting it back together, pivoting, and doing it again until you get it right and actually come out with a win, it's me. That's a life lesson. So I'm not going to stress out about a basketball game, even though it's my team. I mean, shit, the Bruins are out the playoffs. Oh, well. The Red Sox are trash. The Patriots? I have no idea who's even playing who's on the Patriots right now aside from their quarterback. I have so much other shit I'm focused on. And so many other things I won't allow to make my mood deteriorate or to stress me out in a world where everything should. I mean, if I thought about how many more black folks just got killed by police since I did the last podcast, which was about just that. Come on. I only have so many more podcast episodes left. So I don't want to have every episode be about the same shit. I want to go out. I want to go out in a different way. Like, this is episode 94. Episode 95 is going to be about the year 1995, you know, to break up things. Now, anyway, one thing I wanted to talk about was, oddly enough, being a critic, again, I've talked about it before, but being a critic right now, or somebody who discusses art and music and film, is odd in times of pandemic. Is odd in times where the theaters, they're trying to open them, and I don't quite understand their logic. They're all holding out like, okay, the films that we're going to try to get people back into theater for are Tenet and New Mutants. New Mutants, which has had several reshoots and rewrites and pivots, and is still absolutely trash by a trash director and a trash writer who tried to pivot it into making it a horror film when it could have possibly worked had they just paid more attention to the source material and the creators. You erase two Afro-Latino characters in Roberto da Costa and Cecilia Reyes. Then you try to do some extra shit with the storyline, which is one of the all-time great X-Men related comic book storylines, the Demon Bear Saga, which is beloved. So that's the film you're going to put out there to get people, entice people to go to the theater to see? Fuck out of here. And the other one is Tenet, which, don't get me wrong, we were all waiting for. We were all excited for pre-COVID. We saw the trailers when we could go to the theaters. And we knew that this could possibly be Homeboy's star turn. And it still could be. But the idea that you're going to force people to go see it in the theater versus have it available so everyone can see it at home and watch it at home. Think about this. The idea of going to the theater so you experience the surround sound and all this other stuff. But the other thing is, the other factor of going to the theater is the other people in the theater. The other people in the theater, their reactions, them saying things, depending on who's there, can completely fuck it up so that you got to see the movie again, or it brings down your experience. When the film comes home, you can actually really watch it and get into it and understand it and dissect it. I feel as though you're speeding up the process of that by allowing people to watch Tenet at home, and you'd get more motherfucking money because everybody has a fucking big screen TV and speakers and a sound bar, and they're at home where they're comfortable. And you want people to see the film. The film was supposed to be his star turn because it was supposed to be the film that gets people out to come see him, prove his drawing power, and it immerses them into that world. You think that doesn't happen if you don't force people to have to go see it in the theater? I'm sitting on my couch. Usually I sit behind in the big leather chair, but it makes too much goddamn noise. And then again, when I listen back to these episodes, I'm scratching my beard. I'm doing a whole bunch of stuff. Because again, I have a beard because I haven't been to my barbershop since March 8th. And the reason is because the only thing you have to do on me is facial hair. And they want you to wear a mask all the time. You don't have to shave my head. That being the case, I'd have no real reason to go to the barbershop. So sometimes I'm on the podcast, I'm scratching my beard. And you hear it. And it annoys me because I actually listen back to my episodes because sometimes, I don't know, I get on a stretch or just start ranting, and I gotta listen back. I was like, how did I go off course in that episode? Now, that being the case, it bothers me that they don't realize that enough people can have a good enough or equivalent experience at home watching a film. And I understand that industries are dying to get some type of revenue. But if you really understand how things are, you do things for the audience. One of the things you can do for the audience is make these films available so everybody can see them who wants to see them. You'll still get money. You'll still get revenue. Disney Plus did this weird thing with Mulan. Open this certain app or a certain part of Disney Plus and see Mulan now for $30. I don't know if you pay $30, that means you get to own it. You get to watch it again and again and again and again. You get to get a digital copy to put on other devices and all this other stuff. In that case, I kind of get it. But December 4th, it's going to be free for everybody on Disney Plus. So the idea is we're getting closer to the holiday season. You get Disney Plus, or you get Disney Plus now for free, and then you have to pay for it, or you buy the service of Disney Plus around the holidays, and that revenue will make up for us giving you Mulan on December 4th, because we got 3 weeks until Christmas, and ain't nobody going nowhere and doing nothing. It's just annoying, right? And the thing is that if you're a critic in this era, what are you reviewing? You know what we're reviewing? You know what we're talking about on Twitter? Netflix shows, Hulu shows. The Boys debuts Friday, the 4th. So by the time you hear this, The Boys will have dropped. I believe it's on Amazon. That's going to be the big thing everybody's talking about. The big thing everybody was talking about before is whatever new just hit Netflix. We were on Twitter talking about Cobra Kai, because Cobra Kai was on YouTube Red. And watch that shit. I wasn't going to watch a show based around two white guys who did karate in the 80s. I was like, I have no fucking interest in this shit. It's like, Ralph Macchio was so stiff doing karate. And then, of course, we had everybody's favorite white boy villain in every 80s movie. And I was like, I'm gonna watch that shit. It hits Netflix. I'm like, let me give it a shot. I streamed the shit out of both seasons. I did not expect myself to like it. I had issues with certain things. I really wish I could have been in the writer's room for a couple of things. But other than that, you know, it was an enjoyable watch. And Netflix now has it for 2021, you know, to bring back the third season, which the way the second season ended, I can't wait. This is what people are talking about on Twitter. This is what critics are resorting to, because they can't go to the theater. Can't go to the movies. I would have seen so many plays by now, because I had just started to get into them right before, you know, COVID-19 happened. I was really starting to appreciate that format, you know, that art form, and see the real possibilities for it, which is insane to think that I'm doing that at age 44, 45. But when they released Hamilton on Disney Plus, which I did an episode about, I was like, yo, like, there's so many fucking things you can do. And there were times in the past, my big sister and my mom was just like, yo, you want to come out and see Fences? You want to come see Sarafina? And I'm like, I don't want to go to the theater. I don't want to go to a play, even though I'd seen Raisin in the Sun done by high school students. But when I saw the film and I saw Sidney Poitier and, you know, all these great actors, doing the actual roles the way it should be done, I'm like, yeah. And the thing is that they were part of the stage production. So when I'm a kid and I see on TV that they're Pearly Victorious is coming on, so I watch that. Or when I finally got the opportunity to get YouTube and I've been reading about the Emperor Jones forever, I watched the Emperor Jones. So I've seen a bunch of plays and their film adaptations, you know, but I wasn't the person who was like, I'm going to go see it. So I was just getting appreciation for that. I definitely would have gone to more plays. I definitely would have been more involved in the theater. Books are a completely different thing now, because whereas I had so many different distractions of going outside, out into the world, even though I don't really sleep, which is another thing that's exacerbated by the fact that no outside, and so many things closing down and so few options. And it's been months since I've even met somebody outside. I just recently started running into people outside, and of course we're both masked up. And the idea that it's going to be 7 months before I even have a meeting outside with people, and all these precautions have to be done just to ensure that, you know, we're not seeing what happened at Sturgis Fest happen here. We've been pretty good about it, but, you know, you have to stick to it. Because it's easy to backslide. Anybody who's been paying attention to what's happening in Asia could tell you that. Korea was doing really, really well, really well, really well. Then they were like, all right, let's open shit back up. All right, grand opening, grand closing. We don't want that to happen. So, that being the case, when you're in this world and you are somebody whose voice people look at to like, hey, give us your idea on this. You also understand at the same time, your voice isn't always necessary. And that you have to pick and choose your battles. And people like to say things like, let people enjoy things. I feel like I'm iffy on that. Sometimes I get it, because people have their preferences and you're not going to sway them, and you can agree to disagree or just disagree, because that's going to happen. I don't like Mad Men. I never will, you know, but there are certain things that people recommend that I'm like, okay, I'll keep it in the back of my mind. They're like, no, watch it now. Like, people want me to see, Love, what's the name of that fucking show? It's the Call of Cthulhu type shit, that country. And I'm like, with Journey Smollett and other people. And my brother's telling me this. My sister tells me this. A whole bunch of people on Twitter, like, and they're like live tweeting, like, oh my God, this show is incredible. And I'm like, we're 4 episodes in. So this isn't when I'd be watching it anyway. I'd want to watch it when the whole season's done. I May Destroy You, I think that's another show that just ended with Makella Cole. I'm about to get to that because I wanted that to like have run before I get into it, because people said that it, like, it's amazing and it's mind-blowing. Something like Euphoria, I watched every episode because I needed to see the first episode to see if I was even going to fuck with it going further. And then I got hooked. And then it was something that we were all tweeting about. So it became a family watch situation. But, you know, those things are few and far in between. This is what happened with Watchmen. Watchmen was one of those shows that I was definitely going to watch. I didn't expect it to be as good as it was. And then Twitter, you know, with the new Netflix thing, is like, what ended up happening was I ended up watching Teenage Bounty Hunters, which I didn't expect to be as good as it was. And it's one of those things where you talk about it and you're like, you broach the subject and then people start outwardly discussing it, which was kind of what happened with The Old Guard, which really didn't come out of nowhere because they were promoting it a lot. But, you know, this is what critics are talking about, because, again, we're not talking about every movie. We're not talking about every TV show because there aren't a lot of TV shows because everything wasn't allowed to film before and go all the way before COVID happened. Like, there aren't a bunch of people online talking about, even now, talking about what happened in the last season of Doom Patrol. They just aren't. There aren't a whole bunch of people talking about book 3 of Infinity Train. Because they're on specialized streaming services. DC, HBO Max, which certain people have. And the only way to see it, for the most part, wide, to get it out to wider audiences, is for it to be pirated. And that hasn't happened. There's a reason why everybody was talking about Money and Violence on Twitter. Because everybody could watch it on YouTube. And it became an obsession. And then a big point of contention was back in the days of Power. It was on Stars, and some people were getting Stars just to see Power, which is insane to me because past the third season, I didn't understand why anybody would watch it. But then it becomes a thing of being a critic and giving your take on something and its value and its quality versus the mob or the field. You can't really win. Perfect example of that mentality or that is somebody, we're going back and forth about Versus. I didn't watch the Brandy and Monica Versus. I was doing something else. So what happens is someone was like historical Versus, and one was like Prince versus Michael Jackson. And I just tweeted Mike with a Cottonelle. Thought nothing about it, went about my day. Left the house, walked around, enjoying the end of COVID summer 2020. Nobody's outside. It's just me and my all Adidas stuff in my mask walking the streets. My phone starts doing the fucking Harlem Shake. Meryl from Deezus and Meryl is like, no, 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 no. And people are like, what? Like, you're absolutely wrong. Prince does not have jams like Michael, which makes me go, what? Because you got to understand, there are people that have their biases and their preferences. I'm looking at it purely objectively. I'm like, Prince can draw from more places. Prince has more songs. Prince has more songs that he wrote and produced for other people. Prince has more albums. Prince has, like, to say Prince doesn't have more jams than Michael. How does Michael have anywhere near as many jams as Prince has across the board? That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, Michael has these albums. Prince has way more albums than Michael. And way more joints that he did for other people. And way more classics. In scope. Maybe they're not as big. And I think that's the thing a lot of people thinking about. Because Michael Jackson weighs way more in their lives, or they think globally, than Prince does. So their perspective is completely different. It's like a rehash of back in the days when we're talking about the most iconic logos in hip hop history. And people are like, the Wu-Tang Clan logo. And I'm like, actually, it's up there, but it's the Def Jam logo is the obvious answer. And if you're talking to people that did not experience that era, then they don't understand your perspective, and they don't understand you're talking from a different mindset of talking about history. Like, we don't get to the Wu-Tang logo without the Def Jam logo and what it represented. And it's like, I've never seen a Def Jam tattoo. It was like, were you alive between this year and this year? No. Then of course you haven't. Because post this year, Def Jam did not mean what the Wu-Tang Clan did. People were getting Wu-Tang Clan tattoos from 93, 94 when tattoos weren't even all that popular. You know, so to say, I don't remember anybody getting Def Jam tattoos back in 1985. Who the fuck was getting tattoos like that in 85? And on the other side, I do remember it. I remember it in 86, 87, 88, 89, 90. when people weren't getting tattoos like that, when it wasn't the cool thing, when it wasn't normalized like it is now. So that counts for more. And, you know, this always happens. So that was going on, and people were just like, you're trying to make it seem like if you pick Michael Jackson over Prince, that you don't know as much about music. And I'm like, I mean, that's your perception, but kind of, yeah, because you're discounting Prince. That's where my issue is. Not more that you prefer Michael Jackson. You can prefer Michael Jackson all you want, but you're counting out Prince completely. Like, he can't absolutely, he can't fuck around. And I'm like, Prince has way more to pull from in this instance. You might not feel that way, but objectively, if I pull out the scroll, yes. But again, this is the mindset of somebody who's dealing with music history from a different perspective and looking at it from a different perspective versus being somebody who's like, what does Prince have that can fuck with human nature? Which is not how I think about anything. You know? Or what does Prince have that's as good as just another part of me? Prince doesn't have a Thriller. And I'm like, Prince has 1999. Off the Wall was better than Thriller. Off the Wall beats the album Prince made that year. But I listened to 1999 way more than Thriller. And then that's when you think about, is that a bias or is just that just my musical mind at work? Because if we're talking about bias, my bias would lie with Prince. And then that's when it gets to the point where it's like, in that case, this conversation means nothing, because anytime I'll talk to somebody whose bias would lie with Michael Jackson, we will automatically reach an impasse. So there's no point in even exchanging ideas because we're not going to agree on it. And then that's when things as a critic really like stick, because there are other instances where I'm like, I don't even give my opinion on something, because if you like it, that's all that matters. If you see value in it, that's all that matters. Because I know if I like something, if you don't like it, I don't give a fuck. I still like it because it has value to me. Everybody's not going to like Devs. I love Devs. Everybody isn't like Dune. I love Dune. You know, there are some people that love Disney and they love Pixar. I don't. I love Madhouse. Like my niece used to say when she went through my anime. Guns, knives, swords, mecha. And I laughed and I was like, yeah, that's pretty much it. It was like, because that's what you like. That's where your preference lies. I mean, you can see value in something outside of it, but this is your lane. And a lot of the times, I'm not going to critique something outside of it because I know that that might not hit the spot for me. So I'm not the best person to give my take on it. And a lot of people, when they respect your opinion, they're like, hey, how do you feel about this thing that I like? I'm like, dude, it doesn't matter. That's like saying, I like this person. I'm in love with this person. How do you feel about this person? It's like, I don't have to. If it works for you, why does it matter? You know, if I see, I can't see what you see in that person. I'm not around them. You know what I'm saying? But then on the other side of being someone who's critical, it can have drawbacks in this space. And it can prevent you from getting certain places, and people will want you to like bite your tongue. Let me give you a few examples that none of you know about. So back in February 2017, Gimlet Media has a show called Reply All, right? And what happened is that they put a call out and they just asked certain people who are informed, well-respected people within the space of rap journalism and hip hop media who we should reach out to for a particular article or a piece that we want to do about somebody's life or career. One of the people they talked to was Jeff Weiss, The Passion of the Weiss. And Jeff Weiss was like, if you're going to do anything of that nature, one of the people you have to talk to is Dart Adams. And they're like, okay. So they do a little background and like, okay, so enough people are like, yeah, absolutely. You got to go talk to Dart. So they do that. They hit me. And one of the producers for the show explained that it was exactly what she said was, it was a narrative radio show about people and how their lives are shaped by technology and the internet. And we get 3 million listens every month. And our work has been featured on American Life and Radiolab. And the show's based in New York and told me that she had two veteran producers on the show from an NPR show called On the Media. And she explained that the reason that they were reaching out to me is because Q of World Star Hip Hop had recently died. And she wants to get a sense of how the website was perceived in the industry at large. And she says she's working on a tight deadline, so she needs to hear from me as soon as I'm able. It was early February 2017. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'm available. It took 4 days of her pushing it back, saying she wasn't available. She couldn't do this. She couldn't do this. And I'm like, you hit me and said you're on a tight deadline. And can you do this? Now, you have to keep in mind that February is the shortest month of the year. It's 2017. So I'm trying to hustle as much work as possible. So my time is money. So when you tell me, yo, we need you to see your take now as soon as possible. And I am like, all right, because every time you try to hop on Skype with me, you're taking me away from doing something. So if you keep doing this to me, you're not valuing my time. So I'm getting shorter and more curt and less, what's a good word to use? Patient. So after, so on the 10th, we finally hopped on Skype and had a discussion. Now, the thing I told her, and one of the many exchanges we had was that, look, I just need to tell you right now, I'm not going to give you the nice, soft, you know, cute responses. I'm going to say things that you probably wouldn't expect, especially about Q, because I was not a fan of that man or his website. I'm letting you know that now, before we hop on Skype, before we hop on the phone. I knew that shit was about to go left when I told her, we're going to have to do this on Skype. Here's my Skype name. And she said, okay, my Skype name is, and it had granola in the title. And I was like, this is a red flag from jump. I already know this is going to be fuckery upon fuckery. So jump to the 10th. We do the interview. She keeps trying to push me to the nice response. Like, I give her my actual answer, and she's like, but this, this, and this, and this, and this, right? And I'm like, no. And I give her another answer. I give her my actual answer. And then she's like, I mean, but then we have to factor in this, this, and this, and this, right? I'm like, no, we don't, because we look at this person, this person, this person, this person, this person in media, and they didn't resort to this. And at no point did he ever make an effort to do this, 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 and this. So I'm just like going in and I'm like not allowing her to change what I'm saying or trying to soften it up, which I told her was not going to happen 4 days previous. After about an hour and a half, she says, all right, I think I got enough. And the interview's over. She thanks me for my time. And I'm like, cool. Then later on, she hits me and tells me that the podcast is up. And she sends me a link and she thanks me for my contribution and says something to the effect of, my voice is heard and a sound bar at the end or some stupid shit. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? But she'd sent me a link. So I listened to it and I'm listening and I'm listening and I'm listening and I'm listening. And I'm like, I'm nowhere in this interview. I'm nowhere in this interview. And I'm hearing like, all these other people, I'm like, I'm nowhere in here. Then, at the actual absolute end of it, you hear me, and I go back to the email, and I'm like, ultimately, I end up using the taped form of our conversation on background. It was so helpful to talk with you about World Star. It helped my reporting a lot. I appreciate your generosity of your time. If you have a few spare minutes, give the piece a listen. I listened to it and I realized she didn't use anything I said. The entire 90 minutes we were on the phone, she didn't use any of it. She didn't mention me at all. At all. And the thing is that when you listen to it, it didn't dig into anything. It was a fucking puff piece, which I told her from jump. If this is for a puff piece, if this is some soft shit, then you are the wrong person. I'm letting you know that now. I laid everything out days before. And then I get hit back 17 days after initial contact and almost 2 weeks after we done our interview. With this shit. And I'm like, and the crazy part about it is, you have to understand it, after the interview runs, the final 10, 12 minutes of the piece is one of the guys who's a producer or the host is talking about lawn work and finding a fucking turtle or some shit like that. And I'm livid. I'm fucking angry. So I responded, I'm like, I'm confused. That was a half-assed fluff piece. And then the end was a couple of guys talking about a missing turtle. Like, I thought that when we had our initial conversation, you're a producer of a show that gets 3 million listens or however many you said. I told you from jump, if you're going to make a fluff piece, I'm the wrong person to interview because I'm going to give you real answers. And if that's not what you're looking for, please do not waste my time. And then you do the runaround. And when I got the finished piece, it's actually what you were aiming for the entire time with all the interviews with me. So my time was wasted. I feel as though I'm owed an apology as a journalist. She apologized. And I was like, look, if that's what you thought and what you really feel that you achieved with that piece, I can't, then we're at an impasse and there's no just more that we can talk about. It just lets me know what kind of outfit you're a part of. And please make sure to never contact me for anything in the future ever. Thank you. Now, fast forward to 2020. I get hit up by a similar outlet. And now I've been quoted in a whole bunch of pieces. I've done a bunch of interviews. I've helped people with pieces. I'd been hit up by Hassan Minhaj's show to help do research. I've had other people hit me to do research. I'd worked on a whole bunch of stuff, some things for film and television, helped people clean up their books, did research for a whole bunch of other people. All right. So 2020, I get hit and someone's like, okay, so here's the thing. We want to do a piece about Kanye West, but we need somebody who knows his entire career, like the scope, his whole entire like career arc. And I prefer somebody who isn't a huge fan. And you were recommended by several people that are well respected in the field. So we decided to come to you because, you know, we feel as though you're going to give us what we want. And I said, cool. It was like, all right, just to let you know from the jump, it's down to like two or three people. So we're going to interview you all individually and I get to make my recommendation, but ultimately it's going to be on the company themselves. So I say, sure, do a pre-interview. She's like, wow, this is all great. This is all amazing. This is exactly what I'm looking for. When can you be available? We do the interview. The interview happens, and this is like post-COVID, so it's like in Zoom. We do the interview. I'm going through everything, giving my take on certain things. We're going back and forth. The interview happens like over an hour plus. She's like, wow, this is great stuff. You have an amazing grasp of the subject matter. You give important context. And you let me know from the jump, you are not a fan of what Kanye's been doing lately. And you kind of don't try to throw your feelings about his art on other people. It's just not for you. And you understand that his fandom is rabid, but he's doing damage and he's hurtful in these ways, shapes, and forms. He's like, so I appreciate you being honest about everything and being upfront and having all this, perspective. So I'm going to we're going to take all this, go to the people in charge, the main producers and everybody else, and I can make my recommendation, but ultimately it's not going to be, you know, the final word. She hits me back not too long after, and she says, look, I pulled for you, but they went another way. Because I guess they felt that you were just a little bit too real and raw with your take on Kanye. And I guess they wanted it to be softer because they wanted to actually have something to sell and have people listen to it, you know. And I was like, I appreciate that. He's like, but thank you, because you actually made the piece better by providing context and insight and background that I wasn't even aware of. I was like, thank you. I appreciate that. I was like, if you need me for anything else, just, you know, don't hesitate. I didn't get used in that situation. They went with someone else with a softer stance. Was I pissed off? Was I angry? Did I feel like I was cheated? My time was wasted? No. It's all in how the response was and how I was engaged. And I knew from jump that fuckery was abound back in 2017, because the people that did it didn't give a fuck about rap or hip hop or music at all. They spent the last 10, 12 minutes talking about a missing fucking turtle in somebody's backyard, two white guys. In which case, I'm like, if I saw y'all, I'd beat the shit out of you. Like, don't fucking waste my time. In the other instance, what I said, what I did, the context that I provided, even though I wasn't ultimately the person picked, helped out. And the person who interviewed me, she appreciated it. And she respected the fact that I wasn't going to give cookie cutter answers, or that for a change, I wasn't a Kanye stan. So this is the spectrum of what being a critic and being critical gets you in this day and age. You know, I've been hit up by local TV stations to ask me about, they want to do a piece about This Is America by Childish Gambino, right? And they were like, have you seen the video? And I'm like, yeah, I've seen the video. And they were like, so, and they just asking me questions about it. And I can tell that they wanted me to go another direction other than the one I was going in. And I guess they were just like, no, this guy's too, he's too hardcore. Like, we're not going to be able to get what we want out of this guy, because ultimately we're going to need to put him on television. And he probably could write a thesis about this, but we need somebody who's a critic that we could put on television. If that makes sense to y'all. You know, there are critics that you come to for an objective perspective if they're going to be going at somebody on television. But then there's the instances where you need a critic who you need to have on television is going to make it an enjoyable watch. So it's not going to be as static when it's viewed by the audience, because this audience might not be ready for that. So I knew that going in, and then they were like, yeah, so we're going another way. And it was really curt. It was like, yeah, we're going another way. And it's funny because I keep getting emails from them like I was a guest. And it's confusing because it's almost like everybody in Boston was like, you need to have him. And they were like, no, we can't. But I guess they didn't update their database or something. So it seems like I was like a sure thing. And they were like, we can't. So I laugh about that. But in other instances, you know, my, what's the word I'm looking for? Intensity works. And in some instances, it doesn't. You know, it detracts from what someone's trying to do. And that's fine. You just got to figure out where you fit in. And don't lie to get the work. Don't lie to get the job, because you're only doing yourself a disservice. And I think people respect the fact that I let you know up front, this is what you're getting. If you don't want that, then there are options. You know, there are options. There are people that are more media friendly, that aren't going to say the things that, you know, make waves. You know them. You see them on everything. And you wonder, how come they didn't get Dart? Because Dart would have said, that's bullshit. That's incorrect. That's not how this works. You've missed this. You've missed this. Everybody doesn't want that. That's me, though. And that's why I'm doing this podcast, or was doing this podcast. The last episode of this podcast will likely be October 14th or 15th, 2020. That's episode 100. Episode 99 is going to be on the 1 year anniversary of the release of my book, Best Damn Hip Hop Writing, The Book of Dart. I'm going to talk all about that journey and what's happened in the year since. Next week is going to be episode 95 of Dart Against Humanity. I'm going to talk about the year 1995, because this is the 25th anniversary. In 96, I'm not going to talk about 96. Who gives a fuck? It's not 2021. But the point I'm making is that this podcast is coming to an end soon. It's September. And it's time. I mean, let's keep it a buck. I haven't gotten a new ad from Anchor, or the Team Anchor, since November 2019. I've been working with the same ad. It's at 1750 CPM. That's how much money you get per 1,000 new views. And my views, my listens have gone up significantly over the last 2-3 months. I have no accounting for it because when I go to Anchor, it just says other is higher. So other jumps from 25, 26, 27, 28, 29 to 30%. So I don't know where these listens are coming from. And I'm getting more listeners, but I didn't get new ads at a higher CPM rate, which I did back in 2019 when I was getting more listeners in May, April and May 2019. At one point, I had 3 ads simultaneously. I was putting them in the mid-roll. I haven't heard the name, the word mid-roll since in over a year. I haven't gotten anything. I've been told when an ad ends, and then I hit other people. I was like, yo, have y'all gotten new ads from Anchor lately? Nope. Not since 2019. Not since fall 2019. And I'm just like, shit. So on the plus side, this is ending at a good time. Labor should be compensated. When you do it well, you'll be compensated better. It's just what it is. Anyways, next week, Dart Against Humanity episode 95. We're going to be talking about the year 1995 in music, film, culture, all that. One.